This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, your host, joining me to discuss what went down at Craven Cottage, the latest Villa news, three things, and the latest bout of media muppetry. Mr. Phil Shaw, Mr. Chris Bird, welcome.
Hello, sir.
What have you gentlemen been up to recently?
I was at a comedy show. I was at a comedy show. I know I haven't been to Villa Park.
Was you performing?
No. went to see a comedian, and then it was a strange thing because the warm-up act came out and he did 15 minutes. He was pretty good. And then we had to sit for like over...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
45 minutes for the main act to come out, so it was you needed another warm-up. But lucky he was okay. He was good.
Who was he? Is he known?
Neil Delamere. He's an Irish comedian, but he is very funny.
Chris Bird, any comedy in your life this weekend?
Well, I had the nephews down this week, so it's been full throttle action at Cadbury World, amongst other things, with a 3-year-old and a 7-year-old.
Cadbury's World. Is it good, Cadbury's World? How many times have you been there?
I went once when I was a child. I haven't been back for about, quite a few years now.
Have they added anything since last you were there?
It's all right. It's good.
Is it like Willy Wonka's?
I mean, it's not that bad. It's not that mental. You can't go floating to the ceiling or licking the walls or anything. Frankly, I think less of it for it, but it's pretty good. It's worth a look.
Don't you normally lick the walls when you're out at a club night?
No, that's when I'm in the whole 10 toilets. And how are you?
I'm delightful. I think we should have some Villa news.
I think we should.
First up, we just saw this before we started the show, so we're not deep diving on this at all, but UEFA have published the European Club Finance and Investment Landscape Report based on the last financial year. What can we say in summation? English clubs so much richer. I mean, TV revenue is almost twice of what Spanish clubs get. And obviously the Spanish club TV payment is tiered, where Barcelona and Real Madrid get more than the rest. But Villa pop up quite a lot across the board in terms of their wage to revenue ratio is right up there, which starts to explain a few things that have been happening. Can't quite work out if it's 70% or 92%, because it appears as two different metrics on different pages. But I mean, if it's 92%, that's too high, way too high, and potentially dangerous as well. But one point it does say is Aston Villa reported a loss before tax of 138 million euros in 2023 after a transfer-driven profit the previous year, despite the pandemic. This annual loss is one of the three in the top 50 largest historic club losses.
Wow.
Yeah.
They had money so they could spend it, didn't they?
Yeah, so there's caveats, isn't there, that, you know, a bit like the other extreme one more recently will be Newcastle, where because Ashley had spent nothing for 5 years, they had the pot to spend and they had the wiggle room to do it. So Villa had the wiggle room. They were allowed to spend this. So you have to kind of read a bit more into it. We're not like Barcelona, where we're hemorrhaging money left, right and centre and in nearly a billion in debt or anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't pulled any financial levers yet like Barcelona did.
Yet. And we are amortising a lot.
Yeah.
as is everybody in the Premier League.
You can see why they've shelved the stadium, if once you look at this report, and also why there's a lot of talk about offloading key assets in terms of the financial fair play situation. We'll talk about this more once we've digested it, and I'm sure it'll pop up in other media as well. There was a letter from Villa staff addressed to the fan advisory board group in detail, over four pages, detailing the antics of Chris Heck and Ben Hatton in terms of running the club since they've been there. We know for a fact that this letter was actually delivered 2 weeks before it was actually out on Twitter. So this is not like a straight to Twitter type thing. So anybody saying, oh, this is fake, this is attention seeking, it's not. There's a lot of questions to be asked about this, but there is obviously a reality behind it. And that's all we'll say at this point, at this juncture. But no surprise that suddenly there was a bit of, a picture of Mings at Bodymore Heath. It's a bit of deflection and distraction going on. Oh, picture of Chris Heck buying some fans a drink. PR, 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 PR. Mings.
Bury the bad news.
That was a strange one, just to put a picture of him up at Bodymore Heath without any context, knowing how rabid social media is.
Old Fabrizio Romano, he took the bait. He bit it hook, line, and sinker, saying Mings is back in full training and working to get back to fitness as quickly as possible.
Yeah, which, the reality is, you know, you're not going to see, I think Emery basically he said it, didn't he?
Yeah.
He said, hopefully they'll be in proper training and up and at it by the end of the season, where you might see Mings on the bench here and there, but it's really all about being fully fit for next season. Look at what happened to Carlos last season, where he was on the bench and barely saw any action, didn't he? It was just to get him involved again and as part of the squad. So, you'd need a massive injury crisis to see Mings anywhere near starting, certainly before May.
Yeah, I think that was reckless to put out a photograph like that just with no context as well. I mean, that's just stupid. That was just to generate a bit of positivity.
It was, as I said,
feel good, innit?
No, it's potentially weaponized as a distraction, but hey ho, that's just, we're just speculating. Bailey signed a new contract. Improved. This is a strange culture in football, I find. Maybe I'm being cynical, but when a player finally does what he was paid and signed to do, people are saying, give him a new contract, and he gets a new contract after not doing what he was paid and signed to do. This happens. This is not just Bailey. This happens so often. It's like Lambert. Remember Paul Lambert? Does, you know, fuck all, and then suddenly start of a season, wins like three games at the start. Give him a new contract. It's a weird thing where they get signed, get really good money, right, now, you know, now perform and earn that money, and they don't. And then suddenly after a good month or two, suddenly they get a new contract. It's a great industry to be in if you're a player and you want to get rich. Is that being cynical?
It is, but
whatever. No, it's not. What's wrong with Mark Bosnick?
Well, he had a suspected heart issue. He was meant to be broadcasting over the weekend and got rushed to hospital. Since has messaged, I think it was via his official Twitter or Instagram, just saying, I'll be fine in due course. But yeah, I think he had a bit of a health scare.
I mean, hopefully he doesn't do what he used to do when he was a player in terms of narcotic intake. But these things always catch up with you later on in life, don't they? But hopefully he's okay. Speaking of Australian goalkeepers, there's a good link. Joe Gauci arrived. What's that, like a Primark Gucci?
Yeah, you know, we're balancing the books, David.
Yeah, I forgot.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, it's a shame. Yeah, if we hadn't spent so much money in the last couple of years on transfer, we could have got Joe Gucci. Anyways, arrived from Australia and straight in, he was on the bench, so Emery can continue his dream where he plays two goalkeepers on. Well, he has two goalkeepers on the bench, just in case some real shit goes down. Under-21s convincingly beat the Borough 4-0. Travis Patterson.
He looks a good player, actually.
He's been moved around, hasn't he, in position?
Yeah, he was a forward, because he'd been on the bench, hadn't he, a couple of times? He'd been with the first team on a few occasions, and as a sort of a backup attacking player, and then all of a sudden he's playing as like a sort of a wing back who seriously bombs on. So whether they're trying to turn him into a bit of a sort of an Alexander-Arnold type player. He looks weirdly like Jude Bellingham, actually. Strange, it's uncanny.
Could do with a Jude Bellingham, that's for sure. Villa Women got a good win.
Remembered
at the start of the season they got beat by Spurs at home, which really set the tone for what was to become, oh, essentially just snowball from that game. But they won at Spurs 2-1 with goals from Leon and Nobbs.
Yeah, they're doing pretty well without Rachel Daly, who's suspended.
Next up, they play Arsenal in the semi-final of the Conti Cup. Before we go on, supporting the show, something my old man said's been using for a few years now, NordVPN are offering our listeners an extra special deal because it's their birthday. They're offering a birthday exclusive where, as well as big savings on their plans, you get 4 extra months free plus a free Uber Eats voucher as well. NordVPN allows you to watch your favorite screens and other content no matter where you are by switching your virtual location to access apps and websites in other countries. It also protects you from people monitoring what you are watching, which can be useful for various reasons, as well as protecting your safety. One NordVPN account protects up to 6 devices, so you can pretty much protect a whole household. To find out more about the benefits and also access their birthday savings package, go to nordvpn.com/moms, and to top it off, you also get a 30-day money-back guarantee as well. Nottingham Forest hire Mark Clattenburg, the former Premier League referee. I thought he was a United fan. I just presume all Premier League refs are United fans, by the way. He has been appointed by Forest as their new referees analyst. What is the point of that?
It's clearly like a pressure move. I mean, if we remember a few months ago in the 3 points, Barcelona were in trouble because they appointed a referees analyst, but he was still president of the referees association. So it would be like Man United appointing Hard Webb in public instead of in secret, like they have done.
Yes, maybe it's just to lobby his mates at PGMOL. Bit of a strange one. Point number two, the Premier League has filed its accounts for 2023 with a revenue up 13.6%. Can you invest in the Premier League? It seems to be a good investment. Total payments to Premier League clubs are also up 12% in the season 2023. Payments to
I know.
Seriously, yeah. Is this correct?
Yeah.
Payments to PGMOL were almost 17 million.
Yeah, and that was only Manchester United again.
What?
I know.
Who pays them that? All the clubs club together and give them 17 million?
Yeah. You notice it's not 20, so it's not an even split. So.
That is insane.
Does that mean the three that get relegated don't have to put the money in?
Probably.
Maybe they pay 3 million back in apologies.
So that's a scandal straight away. It stopped me in my tracks there. Increase in international TV rights was worth an extra $367 million to Premier League stakeholders, which is the clubs. EFL solidarity payments was down.
Of course. We make more, we give you less. It was weird because obviously at the point of them doing these accounts, Brentford had announced theirs as well, and it basically showed that Brentford had made more profit in the 2 years in the Premier League than Man United, having 31 seasons, essentially always at the top of the Premier League. And that's basically because of the Glazers driving so much debt into the business. So currently Spurs and Arsenal are actually the most profitable clubs in Premier League history over the total period.
I find that hard to believe. I thought United were, well, they're on another level in terms of income, revenue.
Well, it shows how much debt's been driven in by the Glazers, personal debt as well.
Mm.
Whereas Brentford are, as we know, a well-oiled machine.
Lean and mean. Point number three, good pictures, this, good videos. I don't know if you saw the video of what happened in the German Bundesliga 2 match between Hansa Rostock and Hamburg, which was interrupted by remote control cars carrying smoke bombs. 2 cars entered the pitch after 10 minutes, emitting blue and white smoke. Also, was there remote control cars at Bayern Munich's game as well?
No, it was the tennis ball protest. So there were throwing tennis balls. I mean, there was a weekend of protest in response to a plan from the basically the German Bundesliga clubs to sell an 8% share of future TV rights in exchange for like the venture capitalists to promote the league around the world. So they're selling their future
for
so
marketing.
Fans aren't happy.
Yeah, I mean, going back to the remote control cars, rather than getting bored in the upper Holt when players roll around feigning injury, I would like some remote control JCB diggers where I could just like roll them on and push the players off the pitch so the game can commence. Fitted with tasers on as well.
Or a cattle prod.
Well, it's the same thing, pretty much. Big thank you to everybody who joined us for a marathon match club session.
It was, wasn't
of,
it, jeez.
My Old Man Said members. If you join us as a member, not only do you get ad-free versions and extra shows of the podcast, you also get membership of Match Club, which includes, for away games, we get together and do the live show, which is a virtual meeting of us all pre-halftime and post-match. And the post-match one for the Fulham game went on for just under 3 hours, didn't it?
It was like the days of lockdown. I think didn't Vicky say that she'd gone out, shopped for got a delivery, cooked dinner, ate it, tidied up.
Was watching the Manchester City game and it was at the 87th minute by the time we...
And then checked back in.
Called it a day.
Yeah.
Obviously in a live show you can talk about things a bit more freely as well. So it's always worth tuning in to the Match Club sessions. So if you want to join us, like Tim Boswell, Richard Birtwistle... I can't remember if I gave you shouts out last week, but if I didn't, there's a bonus one. Thank you very much, gentlemen. And also Kevin Hayes for joining us as an annual member. If you join us as an annual member, you do get 10% off, which is just over a month for free. So please do go to myoldmansaid.com and click on the membership link there for more details. Also, please do follow us on social media at My Old Man Said, whether it be X, stroke Twitter, Facebook or Instagram. I will keep you updated on things like the website redesign, and also the My Old Man Said merch shop will appear in working order this week as well. So you'll get heads up if you follow us there. Right, let's get into this game. Now, credit where it's due. Fulham, very good at home. Recent months especially, slapped West Ham 5-0, slapped Forest 5-0 in December, then beat Arsenal 2-1 in January and drew against Liverpool. This is as good as it gets in terms of home form. Eighth best home record in the league, although, as I said, they've got really good in recent months. So we were reasonably pessimistic going into this, considering how Villa had been faring recently. Although, two positives was an improvement in performance against Manchester United, but finishing was terrible. And then you had Torres coming in right at the right time, because what you're going to miss with Kamara in the build-up, you will gain and potentially improve with Torres. So he negated the Kamara loss and actually gave us a chance of not being too weakened. Now, Villa just had to crack on with this because United are coming for us. Every day I wake up in the morning, I just think, oh shit, United are coming for us.
He doesn't give a lot away at Ten Hag, but you can see that he's a lot more confident in his team and that they're in a lot better place. I think he'll fancy they'll get to top four. I think he'll really fancy hunting down Tottenham and Villa, and I think they'll be feeling the pressure a little bit. I'm not saying they'll get there, but I think you can see there's a little bit of a bit between the teeth.
In terms of the rest of the team, Tielemans came in further up the field. McGinn played behind. I think when they put the team sheets up, everybody thought like Tielemans was going to play deep sitter, but it was the reverse situation.
It was just slightly different shape, really. I wouldn't say McGinn played deep. He just played slightly deeper, but it was basically just a four across the middle.
Yeah, because I think you can just have Luiz as a sitter and let Torres step up into midfield, and that helps in terms of the playing out. It's just what do you do when your fullbacks bomb on, because Kamara used to obviously slip back as a centre back.
Yeah. This one was interesting actually, because we, a little bit like how we did in pre-season, it was Moreno would go, Cash would slot in. So actually when you don't have the ball, you're actually playing a back three.
Yeah.
And I think that might be the way they go, essentially allowing Torres to step in and almost just, you know, have a much more fluid system, which I think that should work.
Early action, Villa disallowed goal.
fair enough.
Well, Watkins goes through, doesn't he? Very, very early. First couple of minutes, slips the ball past the goal. It's a really good finish, actually, but he is, you know, comfortably offside. But it's a warning shot, fired early.
A bit of warming up for Watkins as well. It may be flagged off, but it's always useful for a striker to get his eye in early doors, so
range
to speak.
Range finder.
Yeah. Fulham, Fulham were all right, though, weren't they? They were threatening
It promised
themselves
to be a good game, actually. They gave it a bit of a go. They had the ball in the back of the net. It was, again, it was a bit closer as a decision, but it was offside. A bit, sort of a worrying sign of Villa defending another set piece, but it was the right decision. And then following that, Fulham played themselves into trouble. Villa get the lead from a dreadfully executed throw-in by them. Yeah. Comes to Ramsey. Ramsey nicks in. Composed, gets the ball to Watkins. Great spin in the penalty area and a fantastic finish into the bottom corner.
Yeah, made up for his Manchester United impotency.
Yeah, it's a great finish, that one.
the turn completely made it, because normally a player would have just snatched at that, but Watkins, again, all an instinct, just turned out the opposite direction, leaving himself, you know, a clean shot across the keeper. It's a bit like the shot, the Chelsea one into the far corner away at Stamford Bridge early on in the season. But again, when he acts on instinct, that's the strength. Ollie Watkins should have been acting on instinct the whole time.
Yeah, it was a smart finish, as they say. And then Bailey was getting into the game. Great effort. The way he beat the player was the main bit of that.
Stunning, wasn't it? The build up to that, and actually the approach play, how we were playing through the middle. You saw, you know, McGinn, Louise, Tielemans all getting through the midfield. I thought that we had really good. A really good first half from Ramsey, where you saw him getting on the ball and driving through the lines. There's some real positives, actually, from the last sort of couple of weeks.
Well, I think Torres is more progressive. He gets that ball forward rather than, you know, sideways.
Yeah, and it puts the opposition under pressure. And I think Villa are better, aren't they, when they play on the front foot? Once Villa get through someone's press, they're just onto you so quickly.
Yeah,
and then
it just helps get the pace involved, doesn't it?
Yes, Bailey and also Watkins. Dynamism.
Yeah, he had defensive work to do as well, because there was a couple of times, I think it was Deckard over Reid, had the run on him, and Torres just stayed strong and you know, gave him the slightest of nudges, and like not even a nudge, like shoulder to shoulder, and Reid dived twice in the game, and Torres gave him plenty of stick for it. But no, he was composed at the back, and as you say there, his passes cut the lines, so he was missing out the area where it seems to have got bogged down in whenever he hasn't been playing. So it was no aimless passing in the middle. Torres sort of missed them out, hit Watkins, it stuck, and then players were playing off him.
It improves the tempo, doesn't it? Well, the whole team's tempo.
It just gets you up the pitch fast.
Yeah, you go from Longley to playing it to Carlos, playing it back, playing it to Kamara, playing it back. Just get them all off the pitch and just put Torres in there.
He's like a quarterback, isn't he? And generally speaking, he makes the right decision.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And at 1-0 Villa, you know, Villa were good value for that. Of course, they had the ball in the net. Moreno has probably one of the talking points of the game, really. There's the ball in the net. It's a good header from a set piece. Goes to VAR. Everyone's scratching their heads going, we haven't got a fucking clue what's going on here. You know, to the naked eye to begin with, you think, yeah, he might be offside there. Then the lines get drawn and everything gets lined up and the frames and the lines aren't parallel to the six-yard box. It's very confusing. And you can see the lines not parallel when you see the goal line. and then the thing's almost at sort of, I don't know what degree that is, but it's noticeably not straight. It's a very strange one. Luckily, of course, it didn't end up
very convenient line, I think, is what I would class it as.
Yes. And it's hard to say, you know, because if you knew where the decision was going and it was Bailey's foot, which is just in an offside position and he's engaging the defender, you'd kind of go, all right, it's frustrating, but at least we understand. Whereas Moreno, you're sort of thinking, well, which bit of him is offside here?
Yeah.
It's a very strange one.
No, it's like you said, to the naked eye in the first replay, you're going, I think he is off in that one. And then as the lines get drawn and get slowed down and tilted round the broadcast, I think, oh, there's a bit of hope here. This is actually onside. And even the broadcasters did say, oh, he looks on. This is just going to be given as a Villa goal. We're just waiting on it. And then all of a sudden, offside. So no explanation, no nothing yet.
Luckily, the chances kept coming. You know, Watkins had a fantastic break, pressured the centre back in the middle of the pitch, drives at pace through there. Tielemans, bless him, is really struggling to keep up with him, but does. Watkins rolls him in. You sort of hoping actually that it was the shoe was on the other foot because you'd have fancied Watkins just to dink it over the keeper there, which Tielemans probably should have done. We should have scored then. And Longley had a chance from a set piece again. So Villa were, you know, pretty good value for the lead at half time. If anything, you're a bit like the, you know, sort of moments in the United game, you're sort of scratching your head going, we could have been home and dry here. And you just hope that, well, Fulham are going to come out in the second half and give it a go, and it won't be that easy again, because I actually thought Fulham defensively were crap, or Villa made them look crap, however you want to, you know, frame that. But you just thought Fulham will get chances here eventually, and with the makeshift back line, who I thought had a fairly good game, I think a few people would have been a little bit worried about Longley playing on the right hand side of a centre back pairing. Actually, I think it allowed Torres to do the ball playing work and Longley to do the sort of the purer defensive work. Yeah, and he had some fantastic interceptions and some really timely ones, certainly in the second half.
That has been his trademark, actually.
Yeah, it has.
Longley, in terms of, he turns up at the right time at the right place in terms of his defending. Half time, I was pretty confident with how it was going.
I thought we should have been home and dry, and that was my only worry. But I actually thought if Villa continue to play this way, there's more goals in this force.
It didn't look like we were going to end 1-0 or they would score next. I think it was important to get the next goal, by the way, but still, we were looking good.
I mean, we looked good against Sheffield United, but we had to caveat that against, you know, we were playing against an atrocious team. We've had five put past them, you know, a couple of weeks later again.
Every week.
Yeah. We played well against Man U without having that final pass and finish. And then the second goal was picture book, wasn't it? Another play through the middle, right through the lines at pace. McGinn to Tielemans to Watkins. Watkins goes through, and it's a really, you know, he smashes it past the goal. He beats him for pace. Just a great team goal.
Yeah, I said at the time it looked like Tielemans was taking a golf shot because he plays the ball and then he just kind of walks off to the side. His job
so
done.
Nonchalant, isn't he? He's like, yeah, that'll be in.
Yeah, it's like finish that.
But that's what he's good at, isn't it? You know, he's not a dynamic sort of a ball carrier, but in terms of picking a pass and unlocking a defence, which maybe we would have thought we might have missed when we lost Buendia, Tielemans can do that. They're very different types of players, but it's a cracking ball, lovely bit of play as a team goal. And similar to some of the goals we saw, you know, like when we beat City and Arsenal in that little run, some of those goals, great finishing at 2-0. I was pretty confident, actually, especially considering I wasn't actually very confident before the game in this one. I thought it'd be tricky. And Villa were making, at that point, fairly light work of Fulham. And you thought, well, we can either sort of run through them at this point or manage the game. Unfortunately, we had to kind of manage the game a bit, but we gifted them a really poor defensive goal to kind of make a game of it when really it should have been game over at this point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing, just to go back to the goal again, is that is your picture book goal for playing it out from the back, because it went down the spine of the team. Torres, De Luiz, De McGinn, De Tielemans, De Watkins, and Watkins is finished. He just hit it. I mean, that's what he should be doing. I mean, no, head down, hit the ball into the corner, great finish. But as you say, it only lasted 6 minutes at 2-0 up, and then let them back into the game. A rare Martinez sort of mistake, you would say.
He said in an interview that because of the high line, you know, he hadn't necessarily played that in his career, so he's kind of still very much learning. And of course, if you're rushing out, and he's done very well at this actually throughout, especially the last few months, he has played sweeper keeper essentially, and he's been very good at coming off his line, and you know, and get that tracks back to the World Cup final in the injury time in terms of closing down one-on-ones. This time he kind of got it wrong, didn't he?
I think they both did. I think it's a collective thing, isn't it, when you get the miscommunication. I mean, when because the ball goes wide, doesn't it, and it's a bit of a, not an aimless ball into the box, but it's a bit of a hit and hope, isn't it? Just stick it into an area and hope for the best. And the forward shouldn't be nicking in front of Longley or Martinez there. Somebody has to take the lead and just go, the ball's
going out. If you watch it, Longley stops because he would have carried on running and just cleared that.
Yeah.
Or played it out, you know, wide. But in that instance, he saw Martinez coming, and that's where he thought it's Martinez's ball, and he takes, you know, he stops running basically because he thinks Martinez is going to go in there.
Yeah, I like that Martinez at least holds his hands up and sort of says, "Do you know what? That's on me." So respect to him for that.
Yeah.
And then Villa could have gone straight up the other end and got a penalty, which was another fucking bizarre decision that don't even think it went to VAR, but you know, Watkins goes flying through. It's another great Tielemans ball, little whipped ball in behind. Watkins takes the ball through and he's taken down. And you think, well, but
was he like shouldered off?
No, it was there was contact at the on the legs.
Legs to leg, wasn't it?
Yeah, because it was Diop again. Diop and Watkins were at it all game. Diop was very physical with him, but Watkins obviously had the beating off him for pace. He just put his leg in front of Watkins and sort of like knee to knee, let Watkins sort of like bundled him off the ball. Now, if you saw some of the penalties that were given this weekend, particularly in the Arsenal-Burnley game, far more contact than that, and just it was strange. It was like everybody, Villa played on because Watkins fired wide, and then he turned around and goes, right, what's going on here? Is it a penalty or not? And again, the broadcast looked at it.
This was a rookie ref, wasn't it?
It was,
and you could tell at times, actually.
And I think what happened earlier on in the game was Torres essentially shoulder barged somebody off the ball in our penalty area, and I think it might have been a bit of a balance the book, so to speak.
Yeah, I think he was in general actually. The game got harder for him as it went on. I think as Fulham got more frustrated.
Well, they went beast mode. They brought
five,
all these
five yellows in the last 5 yellows, wasn't it, in the last 10 minutes or something to Fulham.
Awobi came on at half time for Willian, which I thought was logical. And you know, obviously they had players at the AFCON, so that's why they're not rushing them back. And he was a bit more of a physical difference without really. He made them more of a life threat. Then Harry Wilson came on, and then Traore at his latest club came on.
And had a massive chance, didn't he?
And suddenly it was like, my God, Fulham, they've gone full beast, mate. They're all, you know, big, muscular.
Yeah, Calvin Bassey's a pretty good player as well. I mean, Hard knocks in the Scottish League and then Ajax, and then he's physical as well and powerful. And then an awful tackle by João Palhinha on McGinn, which just hacked him down. And then 2 minutes later, his replacement, they just took him straight off. Sasa Lukic did the same, and Douglas Luiz just
yellow, hacked him.
Yeah, so impressive to get 5 yellows from the 86th minute on.
And then Traore was put through on Martinez, and Martinez redeemed himself.
Never in doubt.
Traditional one-on-one save from Martinez, but there was a moment, though, where he celebrates it, but he celebrates it with his back to play, and the ball comes out, and it goes to a Fulham player, I think, or eventually arrives at a Fulham player. And then he can, it's a bit like when there was a one-on-one? Was it against Everton? Where somebody was put through. Is it Calvert-Lewin?
Calvert-Lewin went through, didn't he? He ran back to
and
goal.
He turned around, back to the action, ran back. It was similar to that. He was celebrating with his back to the action, then he turned around. But there was a moment there, if that ball had gone straight to a Fulham player, that where they could have hit it first time, and he'd be turning around and the ball would be sailing over his head. But all good in the end. But yeah, a bit of a different side of Fulham that you don't normally see. And you can understand now why they have been strong recently at home. And I think that bodes well, hopefully, if any of our rivals have to go there.
Well, man, you have got Fulham at home next weekend, which hopefully Fulham can do us a favour. I mean, Fulham don't tend to travel well, but you can see why they've got themselves about. Because, you know, we were bringing on, I think it was Dinia and Diaby, you know, smaller, diminutive fellas, who, you know, good players, but you're not putting them up against absolute tanks. And then we actually brought on Timur Ogbonu, who I think his first touch was to smash through one of their players. And you thought, well, that'll settle him down well. It was a good little cameo for 5 minutes.
Obviously, coming back from Nigeria's AFCON, their two Nigerians will be a bit more up and at it for the United game, hopefully. Now they've had some minutes.
Yeah, and they certainly carry a threat, didn't they?
Yeah, that United defence isn't all there, is it?
No, they're there to be got at. I mean, they've been getting away with it for weeks, annoyingly.
The big bonus this weekend was obviously Wolves beating Spurs. Yes. So
as big as the win, really. Because just psychologically putting you back into fourth place is big, isn't it, after last week's disappointment? Just calms everyone down.
Well done to the Dogheads. Unfortunately, United beat Luton, but that's a game that it's a given. You've written it down. Anything else is a big bonus.
Mm-hmm. And Wolves was the bonus, because I didn't think Wolves would go to Spurs and win, to be honest. So.
Yeah. Coming out of that game, I don't have much problem with the Torres and Longley situation.
No, neither do I. I mean, if you had just at this moment in time, if you had to choose between Longley and Carlos, which one that you would want to keep around the squad? I mean, I'm sorry, I would be picking Longley at the moment, just from what he's shown, with a bigger body of work.
Chris, would you rate Longley over Carlos?
Right now, yes, but Carlos maybe has a slightly different ceiling, because you've seen Carlos have some really good games. You know, the fact that he sort of dominated Haaland and some of his approach play and ball playing is on a par, then I don't know. It shows how well our squad was constructed at the start of the season. Obviously, we know we lost Mings, but you've been playing with sort of fourth and fifth choice centre backs. I'm glad we've got Torres back. And frankly, if Longley's the stopgap till Konsa comes back in a couple of weeks, then I don't think we're in too bad a shape. And I think we can potentially work without Kamara. We might just have to tweak the way we play. But if Ramsey comes back to the fore and we've got other guy, if you get a bit more out of guys like Diaby, you've got the new lad Rodgers, etc. You've got options. So I think while there was a little bit of panic earlier in the week, I think we've kind of got to have the attitude of, right, we've got the wind back in our sails a little bit. Now we've got to go now.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned this a few podcasts ago where I said, in terms of our centre-backs, we've never had a better squad of centre-backs in the history of this club.
It's incredible the rotation we've got. Yeah, I mean, you've got fourth and fifth choice centre-backs who've both played Champions League football.
And this is one, there's certain factions of the support when Emery was talking about the seven better teams. He repeated that after United, the seven better teams than us. And you had some fans kind of holding on to that and saying, this is a false position where we are. And, if we finish sixth or seventh, that's all right. You're like, whoa. No. This is like kidology, isn't it?
Yes.
You only have to see the Leon Bailey interview before this game where he says, we're going for Champions League. That's what we're after. And you don't have a centre-back setup like this unless you're going for the long haul. Soon as Mings got injured, they went straight in and got Longley. So they had four. They weren't like, we've three centre-backs. We can wing it on that. There's Chambers who could fill in as well.
Yeah, and they've all been playing, haven't they, through the season? They've all got through a bit of work this year. It's not like he's been playing two and one or two have been dropping in here and there. Longley has had a run of games now, and he's been playing in Europe, Carlos the same. They've all had good moments in the season. And they've all chipped in with goals, to be fair.
Because Longley, there was talk of him leaving, was it AC Milan in January? And they were like, whoa, you're not going anywhere. We need you, son.
And it just so happened that obviously Torres got injured, but you want to have Torres back in your team, and if Konsa's back in a couple of weeks, Longley and Carlos will probably find themselves back involved for the European stuff. But that will come round quickly, and of course we're going to have a European away leg a few days before the visit of Spurs.
Yeah,
so it's going to be a big week, that one.
Yeah, watch out for that draw that's coming up soon. Phil Shaw, key stat.
Well, we have a lot of key stats in this one, but we'll go with the big one first. This is about Unai Emery, and it was his 50th Premier League game in charge of Aston Villa. He has 30 wins and 98 points. He drawn 8, lost 12, and it's 5 more victories and 9 more points than any other Villa manager in that number of games.
It's so staggering, impressive. Isn't it?
It is staggering.
That's championship form.
I think John Gregory made a great start when he took over, but then
he did, didn't he?
Obviously,
and then he really tanked after Christmas.
Tanked, yeah. Thanks to Jacob Tanswell for that, doing research for us.
Yeah. Then we go on to these are ones that came out on Villa's own. Watkins, it's his most productive season in all competitions in a Villa shirt, 17 goals. Although me personally would asterisk the three against Hibs, I might reduce that to like one. They only counted as one maybe. But could you just imagine if he could take a penalty, what he would be on?
Yeah, no, that is the main thing. There's a few people out there saying on social media the greatest striker in recent memory, best Villa striker. It's like, kind of recency bias, isn't it? As we see a lot, like when people are saying Grealish was the greatest ever Villa player, it's like, yeah, well, you forget about some actual, real greats. In this case, he's not as good as Benteke. Villa Benteke. He's not Liverpool Benteke we're talking about. We're talking all Palace for Benteke. We're talking about Villa Benteke. If Villa Benteke was in this team,
ooh, watch out. Ooh. Although he's a different player. I mean, I really like Watkins, but you're talking about prime Dwight York as well for two or three seasons, where he was one of the best. I mean, I know Watkins is one of the best in the league, but you're talking about York as one of the best strikers in the league, where probably every team had a 15, 20 goals a season striker at that point in English football. Probably one of the most iconic periods for, and they were all like English strikers as well.
And York could take on a team on his own, as he proved against Newcastle when we were down to 10 men, but he still carried the fight and scored a hat-trick. Although I think eventually we got beat 4-3, didn't we?
We did. Watkins has been great, so long may his run continue. But
yeah, going back to Watkins, he has, and he really needs to get to that 20. I said a good few months ago, if Villa are going to get into the Champions League, we're going to need something like Watkins to pop up with 20 goals and drag us there.
And with the games we've got coming up, you've got Forest to come to Villa Park, you've got trip to Luton, Spurs coming to Villa Park, and more. He's going to have to sort of crack on. And if you want to go into the business end of Europe as well, he's going to really have to, put his foot down. Although I would caveat some of the European stuff by saying, at some point, I think you're going to have to try and rest him, and Europe might be when you have to do that, unfortunately.
No, he's playing. Fill your boots, Ollie. Let's go. Top FPL player.
Well, it's Watkins. Villa. No shock there. 13 points from his two goals.
Ooh. He's like up there, isn't he? After Haaland, he's like the main man, or is he above Haaland? Yeah.
He's above Haaland. He's actually after Salah when it comes to the goal involvement. He's just behind him, although Salah's back fit now, so he'll need to do something to catch him.
Right, while you're talking, let's get some Media Muppets action. Right, what's in the trough this week, Mr. Shaw?
Well, this week it's about the tale of two goalkeepers for Fulham and Aston Villa.
Ooh.
Yeah. Now, this came from an interview in The Sun. Now, it's an urban myth, and it's sort of like a meme that Emi Martinez only got to the heights that he got to because Leno got injured in Project Restart whenever Neil Maupay made him twist his knee. So it's the sort of thing that it deflects from the sort of the qualities that Martinez had, because Martinez came in for those last 10 games. He played well. Arsenal won the FA Cup and the Community Shield. And then, of course, the rest is history. Moves to Villa, gets the number one position in Argentina, goes on, wins the Copa America, wins the World Cup, wins the Golden Glove, shafts that. Everything's good.
Leads Villa into Europe, Champions League.
We'll hopefully get into that.
And the Europa Conference League as well. He wins that as well.
Yeah, but it's the sort of thing that you don't expect, the player involved to sort of agree with the internet as well. But it turns out that Bernd Leno still believes this as well. He said in the interview with The Sun before the game, probably Emmy's career wouldn't have happened if I had stayed on my line that day. I mean, I think the only thing that changed was Villa having to fork out 20 million for Martinez.
I think you're being a bit rash here. I kind of agree with this urban myth.
Villa were needing a keeper. I think the only thing that happened was Martinez was a bit harder to get after that. He would have been on their books. It wouldn't have just been suddenly, oh, he's playing well on TV, get him in.
Yeah, I don't know. Because it is a bit of a... He actually proved himself as a Premier League keeper, which he was out on loan most of the time. He rarely got a sniff for Arsenal. So that would have been like, oh, he looks all right. And then a case of, right, can we actually get him? Because they would have put in the call and said, will he be Arsenal's number one? And I think the verdict was no, he wouldn't be. And then they thought, right, let's get him because he wants to play first team football. Because I think he would have wanted it at Arsenal. And he was probably thinking, right, I've won my spot now, here we go. And they said, no, sorry, mate. And he was like, right, fuck you, I'm off to Villa.
And he's always said that, hasn't he, about Villa, that he's been so appreciative that Villa were the ones that gave him the platform to achieve everything he's achieved.
So unless you want to defend that, Phil Shaw, I'm calling it.
you can believe the urban myth if you want. I mean, Leno should have just been a bit more humble about it and just said,
Well, no, what's he said that's wrong?
No, at the time that Martinez left, they interviewed Leno and says, this was the Mirror interviewed him this time, and he said, did you ever fear losing your place to Martinez? He says, no, I've never feared it because the club gave me the feeling I was number one. I am the number one and I will be the number one. But then
that fits what I've been saying. That fits what I've been saying, because that's what they told Martinez as well. And he said, right, see you later. Screw you guys, you cockney bastards. That's how it played out. That's how I remember it. So it was a bit of a sliding doors moment for sure, I think. I'm not 100% sure that he would have turned up at Villa if he hadn't played. Also, you've got to justify dropping money. Obviously, as you say, his price would have gone up. But they would have to see him win an FA Cup and a Community Shield at Wembley would have reassured them however much money they're going to pump into him. So, I don't know, Mr. Media Muppet. Right, any final words?
Everything just feels a little bit calmer, doesn't it? If anything, actually, you're looking at bar the sort of Chelsea
we're still going week
result.
To week. There's a crisis. Yeah. As you said on the Something for the Weekend, as Steve Bruce once said, the next Villa crisis is only a week away.
Now we'll see what letters get published this week.
When Forest complete the double over Villa, there's the next crisis.
I fucking better not. We need to get our home record back. One win in five is not a good look from where we've been over the last sort of year or so. We need to get a home win and drop out.
Need to massacre those
tricky trees.
Tree-dwelling trickies.
Chop some down.
Right, until the visit of the tricky trees, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.